people assume that everything is fine at Love Canal, but there's this lawsuit that was filed last year, a $113 million lawsuit, raising some very serious questions. And people who live in the neighborhood do feel that they've had serious health concerns. One family had a little boy born with club feet and other birth defects. They were so scared by this, they abandoned their home. They moved to Pennsylvania. So there are serious questions to be asked and answered in the future about Love Canal. Is it really safe? Is history repeating itself there? And did the government make a mistake by letting people move in there?
And Charlie, today, Monday, your story focuses on another aspect of it.
Yeah, today, you know, the kind of the natural question we had, and I think a lot of our readers have, is, okay, this, you know, Love Canal is brought up again, but why were people not only allowed but encouraged to live there? And also, I think a lot of people wonder, why would anyone want to live around the world's most notorious toxic waste dump? And we kind of get into that in the story today. We talked to a few residents who, you know, have moved in the past 10 years when the building boom has gone on. We described the neighborhood. You know, there is one side of Love Canal that really is kind of a wooded ghost town type area. You have 5-6 houses of people who have never left since the crisis, kind of holdouts. But then right across the street, you have a whole new neighborhood renamed. It's called Black Creek Village. And those houses, the government says, are completely safe to move into. These are the same houses that people like Lois Gibbs abandoned. And so, you know, there's people out there saying, how can you just draw a line on a map and say that this is safe? Meanwhile, the government says, hey, this is the safest piece of property, not only in Niagara Falls, but in Western New York.
So can you tell us, Charlie, perhaps, is the neighborhood contaminated once again? Has the cleanup failed to some extent?
Well, some of the residents, you know, I'd say are really beginning to question that. You know, we can't say definitively. We're not scientists. We didn't do any testing ourselves. But the government has taken us in, showed us the facility, given us a tour. Occidental Chemical has showed us the facility, showed us why they believe everything is safe. They say they've tested the area after this sewer incident happened and that, you know, no alarms went off. But the neighbors really raise some interesting questions. You know, they talk about health problems that just all of a sudden spurred after this sewer incident. They talk about chemical gases coming in, blowing sewer pipes off in their basement. And, you know, they raise the question, okay, the government says this Love Canal chemicals that they found in the sewer were just something that they missed. Well, the families are wondering, if you miss that, how do you know you didn't miss something else?
What, if anything, has been most startling to the both of you in your research and who you've talked with for your articles on this?
Well, one thing that's surprising to me is when we asked the state and federal governments for safety reports on the Love Canal landfill, they gave us reports that were compiled by the very company that runs the landfill, a profit-making company called Glen Springs Holdings, which is an arm of Occidental Chemical. And to me, it was surprising that the government would take reports compiled by a private profit-making company and basically put their stamp of approval on it. Now, in fairness to the government, DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, they tell us that they work very closely with this company and that they watch very closely to make sure that everything that they are filing is accurate and true. But the lawyers on the other side of this case describe that as allowing the fox to guard the hen house.
And for me, you know, this is a very personal thing for a lot of the people in Niagara Falls. It's a real scar on the history, on the image of Niagara Falls. And, you know, what I found talking to officials there, that this is really viewed a lot differently inside of the city, especially among the people that were from that neighborhood, than it is outside. I raised the question with city officials, was it a good idea after all to build there after the crisis? And they kind of looked at me like, well, of course it was. They said, why would we rebuild the Jersey Shore after Hurricane Sandy? And, you know, to a lot of people, I think, in Western New York, you know, they have a different reasoning, a different mindset when it comes to what Love Canal really was and what it should be.
Given what you've both been researching and writing about in the last few days, would you live there?
Well, I'm a very cautious person in terms of my family's safety. And I certainly wouldn't condemn anyone who has moved in there with their family. The only thing I would say is, yes, you can get a home a great bargain on a home there. But I would do a lot of research, independent research, before I would move into that neighborhood.
Charlie, your thoughts on that?
Personally, you know, if I was looking at a house there, you know, you always have to wonder. There's that fenced-in area down at the end of the street, and, you know, there's no sign on it, and you can kind of pretend that it's not there. But I think for the families we interviewed, and I would be going through the same thing, which is, you know, do you want to live with that specter over you every day? And that's something that's become a reality for these families. So if I was looking at a house there, that's something, you know, I'd really have to take into consideration.
Have you been able to talk to Lois Gibbs?
We haven't talked to Lois Gibbs, but we did actually reach out to her organization. She's head of a nonprofit, a big nonprofit environmental group in Washington, D.C., the Center for Environmental Health and Justice. And we did actually talk to her husband about this. And, you know, it's interesting. You look back at the newspaper clips and she came back for the 25th anniversary of it, and she said, you know, it's really only a matter of time before this leaks again. And I think, you know, people are reading those words now and thinking maybe she was right. Clearly her group feels that, you know, there never should have been any building there, any resettlement there. And she's been kind of sounding the alarm bells, you know, ever since the crisis first started on that.
I'll just throw one thing at you that I think is kind of interesting, which I didn't know about. One thing we learned in working on this investigation over the past few months is each year, 3 to 6 million gallons of liquid water, basically groundwater, leaches through the Love Canal landfill. It is then, you know, it's contaminated with chemicals. Then it is treated on the site. It's filtered, sent through two different filtration systems. Then that goes into the Niagara Falls water treatment plant, and eventually it's treated again. It ends up back in the Niagara Falls water system. I was surprised by the amount of water that goes through there and then eventually ended up back in the water system.
And always, it's because it goes through the treatment process, they tell us it's safe. Again, leaving that question mark for citizens.
You know, I think that what sticks out to me is I think a lot of people in the neighborhood are really going to be learning about this for the first time when they read our stories. The government says that there was some sort of a public outreach campaign by the chemical company to let some of the affected families know about this, but just from going door to door, a lot of the families really are not aware of the lawsuit. A lot of them, you know, had heard things about this sewer problem, but they really didn't know many of the details. So I think in a lot of cases, the families, you know, are left in the dark here. And I think this is going to, you know, at the very least, help the public better understand the situation.
Did you find almost a lost generation that didn't realize how the severity of what happened the first time around? Is that...
Eileen, one day Charlie and I were walking around the neighborhood, and we saw a youngster, 12 years old, playing basketball in his driveway, which is in clear view of the toxic landfill. And he was a real nice kid. We went up, started talking to him, and he told us he really didn't know what Love Canal was. Then his mother came out. She started talking to us. And she knew quite a bit about it, but she said to her son, don't you remember there were poison chemicals buried over there? And he said, oh, yeah, that's right. But you know, I really think that there are people who have bought homes over there at tremendous bargain prices. We've talked to people that bought houses for as little as $40,000. Very nice looking houses. It's a nice looking, suburban looking neighborhood. It's a low crime area. And yet, there are people there who really know almost nothing about the history of Love Canal.
Now, granted, if you're from the area, you probably do know something about Love Canal, but you have to keep in mind that, you know, there's no sign on the landfill, there's nothing, there's no museum or anything like that. In fact, they talked about building kind of an environmental outreach center museum there a couple of years ago, and the neighbors hated the idea because they didn't want to bring back that memory. So a lot of people in the area want to move on, they want to put it in the past, and others, you know, are learning about it as after they buy houses here.
Well, Dan Herbeck and Charlie Specht, thank you so much for coming into our studios and sharing your research and your stories about revisiting the Love Canal issue. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Eileen.
Thanks for having us.